The Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Solutions Developers Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency might be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, we're speaking with Michael Wood, who is the director for recovery.gov. How are you doing, Michael?
Good. Thank you for having me, John.
Great. I always like to tell my guests who my listeners are. My listeners are federal program managers who are searching about for solutions and may want to have a solution in regards to VOIP solutions, maybe security, using cloud services, different types of software methodologies. I thought we'd get someone who's been beat up and knocked around and been successful, get him on the air, and he can share with my listeners best practices, maybe some of the challenges he faced and how he overcame those. And I thought it'd be a good topic for a show, especially with something as visible as recovery.gov. Michael, tell us a little about your background, how you wound up working with this organization before we go into some of the nitty-gritty here, please.
Well, I've spent over 30 years in the federal government. Actually, my real training is as an environmental scientist. I spent about 25 years at EPA. I ended up working at the Department of Interior, IG, as Earl Devaney's chief of staff. Earl is the now the chairman of the recovery board, which runs recovery.gov. When he went over there, he asked me to come over and manage the transparency side of the work, which essentially was the recovery.gov website and working with OMB and trying to figure out how to collect the information from the recipients of the stimulus package. I do have a background. I mean, I have a master's in technology management. I have a background in IT. I've worked on a lot of IT projects throughout the years. Nothing this big or this high profile. So it was interesting.
And you had your feet to the fire, too. It wasn't get it done when you want to. It was, hey, the deadline's coming up, buddy, and let's push this through.
The law, basically, by the time we got the staff put together at the board in May, we started in February, but we really got things sort of gelled in May. We had about 5 months to do this. The law required us to collect the information in October 2009. So that gave us really a five-month window to work on building essentially two large web systems.
Now, we may have some listeners who work for agencies that are placed on projects where they have to use information from many different agencies, cross-agency collaboration, and deliver services. And your stakeholders were not only federal agencies who you could expect some compliance with, but states, territories, municipalities, universities, and they have to have a site where they can provide information quickly and easily. And this type of information can go up and down. Certain days of the month you can use it, certain days you can't. So it's a dynamic range. I mean, it should have failed.
Yeah.
He's got all kinds of earmarks of, this will never work.
It should have. We actually had MITRE-TECH do a study early on, and they basically said the risk of failure is like on a 1 to 10 scale was like a 9, which almost made the chairman faint at the time, but brought it home. You're right, John. There were two huge risks. One was time. The other was the requirements. The whole program was being put together over the summer, so the requirements were flat fluid. We didn't know how many recipients we were going to have. We didn't know how big of a system we had to build, how robust it needed to be. So there's some real difficult project management challenges that the team faced.
And one challenge that I think that you face, that some of my listeners may face too, is trying to come up with some kind of a way to exchange information. There's all kinds of different ways to do it. And you selected the EPA's very successful central data exchange. So that seemed to work well for you in this project. Is that right?
Yeah, we basically we had two problems. One, we had to collect the data, and then we had to portray it in a sort of a user-friendly fashion for the American public. To collect the data, we split the problem into two. We built two different systems. One is federalreporting.gov, which collects the data from recipients. And we're collecting about 210,000 reports a quarter, which is a fairly high level of activity. So we had to figure out how to do that. We looked around. We essentially initially looked at collecting data using existing federal systems. They don't talk to each other very well. There's different standards and so forth. We settled on the EPA approach that was a workable system. It was a web-based system called CDX, developed by EPA with their contractor, CGI Federal, and we were able to buy into that contract and hit the ground running on a data collection process.
And, you know, I've heard about that system as far as the handheld identity. They have been a lot of success. Right now, I think the Smart Card Alliance is meeting in town, and that's the kind of stuff they fight and talk about. And EPA had a lot of success with that. And so if they can have success with small handheld devices with larger amounts of information, they'd have success too, wouldn't they?
Right. They would. And we liked it because it was web-based. We liked it because it had been tried. We didn't have time to develop a lot of new technologies. We basically had to go with tried and true. For instance, there were so many different stakeholders in this, states, recipients, contractors.
Every federal
universities,
agency.
All the federal agencies.
Right.
Very, very difficult. At one point, we actually bolted on a solution for the states, an FTP solution on bulk reporting. So we were building this over the summer. We put the contract in place in June. It actually, the first piece became available in August for recipient registration. And then we did the first quarterly reporting starting in October. So it was a very, very short time frame.
And I think the listener should realize that this isn't a system that you can just log in anytime you want and get it. When you talk about 210,000 quarterly reports, there's a 10-day time frame once a quarter where all this information comes in. It's almost like a tsunami of information. It's like, okay, here comes the flood. It's coming. Flood of information, and wait another quarter. Just designing a system to handle that dynamic capacity, that's a challenge in and of itself.
Yeah, it's a real challenge, and it was a challenge. The initial challenge was not having a workable system, a test system that we could do load testing on and so forth. We were essentially building this system over the summer of 2009, starting late June through October. We were building it during the day, and we were testing it at night. We were banging against it to see if we could break it. And we did a lot of that. That was one of the keys to success, a lot of testing to sort of replace actually having a beta product that we could put out there for a while and play with.
And most software developers test, and there's a lot of processes involved in testing.
Right.
You can almost predict a lot of the situation. But how can you predict how many we're going to hit the site? How can you predict what's going to happen to the site? How can you predict what kind of load balancing you'd need during those 10 days? I mean, that must have been a challenge in the testing area.
It was a tremendous challenge. I think we hit it right the first quarter. We got over 100,000 reports the first quarter. It's up to 210,000 as of this last quarter. We made some enhancements, actually, in the year that it's been in place, and it's now running. I was talking to some state people last night, and they said it ran very, very well this last quarter. But that was a real challenge. We didn't have the requirements as far as how many reports we were going to collect, how many people were going to be on the system at any one time. So we had to build it to be fairly robust. You're right. The law requires people at the end of the quarter, they close their books, they have 10 days to report.
That's it.
That's an amazing amount of time. That's light speed for financial reporting. So they have 10 days to report. We have 20 days to do QA. Then we post. And I'm very proud that for five quarters now, we've hit those goals. We've actually done that, which there was some question whether it could be done in the beginning, but it can be.
When we get back, talk more about the success of recovery.gov. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, we are speaking with Michael Wood, who is the director of recovery.gov, a very successful collaboration site for the federal government, and a lot of lessons learned here. And one of the lessons I learned is just the number of stakeholders you had to juggle getting all this information. I mean, it's a pretty long checklist, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It was kind of amazing. It was very large, very flexible. We were sort of shooting for a moving target, and I think we've done pretty well. We've hit it. And it's been, you know, well-received. We've received a lot of awards from industry. I think the website, people like it. It's available. The interesting thing about recovery.gov is we made it a local website. You can basically go on, type in your zip code, get a map that shows what's happening in your area. And that was our goal, not to have it a Washington site, but to have it a local site that would be interesting to people across the country.
Serve the citizens.
Right.
What kind of best practices can you share with our listeners if they are encountering or have a challenge like that in their future?
Yeah, as I said, you know, we had two real challenges. One was time. The other was not having the specific requirements in place. I think there were four or five things that were very, very important. One was executive support. We had tremendous executive support. We had support from OMB. We had support from the board. We had support from the White House, Congress, everyone in the states. Everyone wanted this to work. So, number one, there was tremendous executive support. Two, I think we had some very, very high-performing teams, which we can talk about a little bit, and we got some best-in-class contractors. We ran this project very differently than people might think federal projects run. I know there's a lot of federal employees that listen to this, but this was more like a Silicon Valley startup. We were working 24/7, and one of the keys was I had federal people, very technically talented federal people that could stand toe-to-toe with the contractors. I had guys that could program that would say, we already did this. Why are you trying to charge me to do it a second time? Let's get back on track here and do it right. That's very important, and that's very, I think, often unusual. A lot of times federal contracts will be let for a big project. They'll say, here, this is what we want. Go do it and report back in. We were working hand-in-hand with these folks, so it was a real, almost a partnership sort of thing, unusual. The other thing we had, John, I think, is clear objectives. We used critical path management. We didn't deviate from that. We solved problems as we went. There wasn't anything sort of in the path that was stopping us. We'd move around them. The teams I had put in place were really good. They were problem-solving teams. They solved problems, a lot of them I never even heard about. The other thing we used was a very lightweight change management process. I had a guy that the tech guy that manages for me, Jim Warren, is just absolutely fantastic. Jim, I worked with him at DOI on computer security. His background is more probably in information assurance. When you do that kind of stuff, you know computers from, you know, the machine layer all the way up to the application layer. Jim was a very, very talented guy. He was the spoke in the wheel. If things need to happen, people would talk to Jim. Jim was smart enough to come to me if decisions needed to be made that were sort of beyond the pale of day-to-day work. We would make decisions on changes within a matter of hours. If I needed to get a hold of Chairman Devaney, or we needed to get a hold of Ed DeSev at the White House or Danny Werfel at OMB, we'd do that. We'd get decisions made and we'd move forward. That's a very unusual sort of thing. You know, people put together change management processes, a lot of paperwork. Sometimes it takes months to get a decision. We did it in hours and days, probably.
Yeah, really agile and flexible. And the end result is in the cloud.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Kind of your head's in the cloud and your feet are in the ground. Huh?
If you look at, we use rapid prototyping on the inbound side. On the recovery.gov, we redesigned it. We basically were able to meet our deadlines because they put the test and the development environment in the Amazon cloud and built the machines that way. Then we built them, the physical machines. It's a large SharePoint application. Microsoft tells us it was the biggest public-facing SharePoint application. We were looking at it. We were looking at a COOP process, and we were working with our contractor, Smartronics, who did the recovery side of things, recovery.gov. And we decided in the spring that we'd just move to a cloud environment for production, and we did. Smartronics worked with Amazon. They selected Amazon. We okayed it. The big challenge for the federal government was, would it be run in the U.S.? Amazon gave some assurances that it would be. So the servers that they're using are in the U.S., and we moved to the cloud. We did that also in record time. That took about 12 weeks. We're unique.
Did you say 12 months?
12 weeks. The unique thing is we don't have a lot of security concerns. I steal my data. I'm all about transparency. So
yeah.
There is an advantage there. There's a lot of federal people that there's security concerns, there's privacy concerns. We have less of that. So we had an advantage in being able to move very rapidly. But that's been very, very successful. It gives us tremendous flexibility. You can spin up servers very quickly. Confidentiality was not a concern. If we need to change or if there's a problem, we can actually spin up a new server in about 5 minutes. And that's worked out very, very well.
You know, I'm an old geezer, Mike. I've been doing this a long time, and I'm thinking go back 6 or 7 years. And so if I'd get some in the studio and they'd say, well, we switched to a Microsoft software and we're hosting it with a Microsoft's competitor, and where the servers are somewhere.
It's a brand new. I don't know. You can figure out where the servers are, but it's not easy.
Michael, if I'd have told you this 7 years ago, you'd have told me to jump out the window. You'd say, "Can I get this straight?" So Microsoft is going to use it on their competitors' hardware somewhere in the United States. It's not going to be down the hall, and we'd have to worry about heating it and cooling it and wasting it. It's a brave new world, huh?
Nice thing about IT, John. Blinking, you're a dinosaur. it's changed. We've got people working together that you would never think. And I think to be successful, you have to do that. The teams I put together just to build this, that were some of them were already in place, OMB had started them, but we had a tremendously matrixed group of people. For the inbound side, for federalreporting.gov, we basically had EPA heading that up, Connie Dwyer over at EPA and some of the folks that worked with her. But I had people from other agencies, GSA, OMB, on that team. On the outbound team, on the recovery side, you know, we had just a plethora of people chipping in, probably about 10 agencies combined working on it. So this was a very, very matrixed organization. Not only was it a high risk because of time and lack of specific requirements, we also had a lot of people from that didn't report necessarily directly to me. They did a fantastic job. So, I mean,
it's almost like
it worked.
Yeah, the case study here may not involve, you know, the cloud or dotted quads or technology issues. It may involve just collaboration and how to overcome challenges in collaboration with other human beings. That probably is more of a story than a technical story here.
Yeah, I think really when you look at, you know, my main push on this was the project management piece. I wanted to put some good project management pieces in place. I let the tech guys deal with the nuts and bolts of the day-to-day things like programming and scripting and so forth. But from a project management standpoint, we managed time as a risk. We used critical path, and we didn't let problems get in our way. We just solved them, and we had a lightweight change management process that seemed to have worked.
Solve those problems. We'll talk more about problem solving, cloud solutions, and recovery.gov when we get back. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're speaking with Michael Wood, who is the director for recovery.gov, very successful collaboration project for the federal government. The federal government, especially the Obama administration, likes to focus in on transparency, transparency, transparency. We've heard it for almost 2 years now. And this project, guess what? Pretty transparent, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, John. It's a sort of a real change for the way the government tracks things. We're tracking money almost real time, light speed, you know, quarter by quarter. We're getting a 10-day period where people report, and then we're posting it right away. That's unheard of not just the federal government, but as far as industry. So it's happening very fast. It's leveraging technology. And it's a real change for the government. I was just up this week at a fraud conference that was held for contracts and grants by the IG community. The vice president spoke, and then Congressman Issa spoke, Chairman-elect Issa, who's going to be in charge of the government oversight committee in the House. Both of them spoke, and both of them said similar things, surprisingly. Vice President Biden was very, very complimentary about how this site works so well, how transparency is changing the way we're looking at government, and saying that he thinks that this should be a template for the future, that we should extend recovery.gov and sort of that concept beyond the life of the Recovery Act and maybe look at other ways, other government spending, especially large spending. Congressman Issa had a very, very similar thing to say. He supported transparency, and he supported using technology to make information available to the public on how the government was spending their money, how the citizens' tax dollars are being spent. So I think from that perspective, this has been very successful. For the first time, we have very, very rapid information coming in on how money is being spent, who's getting it, what they're spending it for. We're putting it up on a website that people can look at. They can see the local story, what's happening in your own community, based on congressional districts, based on county, state, or zip code even. So it's been successful. We just came out with this week a new site, federaltransparency.gov, that's starting to track some additional money. There's $10 billion under an education jobs fund that is paying for teachers' salaries and so forth. And there's over 50 grants that are being tracked on that starting this quarter for the first time. So there's a new site, federaltransparency.gov, that sort of is an attempt to build a template that might carry recovery.gov beyond its sort of existing lifespan. The vice president sort of said his jurisdiction does not end with recovery. Congressman Issa, I think, is supportive of a lot of the things we're doing, both in transparency and in the other part of the board's function is accountability. We've got some very, very unique features in something we call the Recovery Operations Center, the ROC, where we're using technology to try to prevent fraud, not just detect it after it happened, but actually look at trends and try and stop it from happening.
So the lessons learned are you're thrown in the fire a year ago, and you used a very flexible approach that adapted quickly to responding to change, and you wound up with a system with one vendor using another vendor's hardware in the cloud. Yeah. I don't know if you would have predicted at the beginning of the fire. I mean, I wouldn't have.
I don't think we went into it that way, but we've had tremendous help from across the government. A lot of the agencies that were involved in this and some of them that weren't supported it with resources, people that came in on details or people that worked on the project. You know, GSA had some real key people, Earl Warrington and John Murphy Jr. and so forth. It's been a very, very good experience. Our contractors are best in class. We've got CGI Federal and on the inbound side for federal reporting. We've got Smartronics and their subcontractors on the recovery.gov side. They're using people like Cineractive, KPMG, Jack B., Amazon. The list goes on, Business Objects. So it's been very, very collaborative, and we've gotten a lot of support both from the private sector, the contractors who have really pitched in and done a yeoman's job, and from the federal employees who worked on this.
And I think from just a detached perspective, I've been involved in large data collecting projects, and that there's a challenge in doing it fast and then doing efficient and doing it accurate. Well, you can have one or two of those three, but you can't have all three. But the challenge here is it's got to be fast within 10 days. It's got to be efficient because it's working with many different organizations. And it's got to be accurate because it's going to be publicly available information. They're going to say, hey, Michael, hey, you made a mistake here. And they come back to you. And so the transparency works.
Yeah. The interesting thing about transparency, it's not for the faint of heart. We're basically publishing what the recipients tell us. And we get blamed a lot if the information doesn't look right. It's kind of interesting the way we built this. We added edit checks as we went because first quarter we were afraid no one would be able to report, and if we stopped them through an edit, that would be it. We've added a lot, like you can't claim to have created as many jobs as the amount of money you received. If you got $10 billion grant, you can't say you created 10 billion jobs. Simple things like that. The data quality is the real issue. It's something we continue to work on all the time. It's pretty good. This site has... I would rate it very, very highly as far as data quality. There are some issues. We work through them. We've got teams that look at that. And we basically opened it up on a more continuous QA process so recipients could go in and fix their data. So
continuous improvement. I would like to have you back in 6-8 months and talk about continuous improvement, see what has transpired just over the last year, especially with federaltransparency.gov. It's a great story. I think many of my listeners could benefit from firing up this interview and listening to it one more time. Have to conclude the interview here, though. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guests for coming down here, Michael Wood, who's the director of a very successful recovery.gov. Thanks, Michael.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Solutions Developers Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.
The latest from the Federal Security Spotlight brought to you by Cisco.
The private sector may have cut back on cybersecurity training, but not the federal government. Here's John Lau, IT program manager at UMBC.
The private sector definitely decreased its training budgets, but because, particularly in Maryland with BRAC, with the Cyber Command being stood up in this area, and then that also includes Aberdeen Proving Ground down to the Northern Virginia, the number of programs that are national defense and specifically cyber-focused, there's tremendous growth.
To hear the entire show, log on on to federalnewsradio.com. Will the top-of-mind security issues of today be the issues facing government tomorrow? Get the latest from federal experts on FISMA reform, the cyber initiative, how government is combating botnets, spyware, and other cyber evils, and more. Listen to Federal Security Spotlight, sponsored by Cisco, airing Thursday from 10 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. or on demand at federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Security Spotlight is brought to you by Cisco, the leader in federal IT security.